Hi, and welcome to the Expansive Podcast, a podcast that's about being expansive in your business and in your life. My name is Eric. I'm one half of the Expansive. And as always, I'm joined by my ever elegant co-host sitting in Dubai today, John Sane. John, brother, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Having a fabulous time in Dubai. So much going on in the city. I think I say that every time we talk about Dubai, but I'm really great. Excited for the year ahead, well rested and tanned. What's up with you, man? Yeah. You've just come back from an epic trip across Africa.
I was going to say, pretty much all I see about you these days are topless pictures on Instagram next to the ocean, like next to the pool.
Yes. Yes, and ocean. And ocean.
That's just your life right now.
That is my life right now. I've lost 10 kilos and I'm, well, I don't know if it's a thirst trap. No,
I saw your Facebook comments. Those are thirst traps.
look. Let me just say is I'm celebrating my six pack. I'm 50 this year, and I haven't had a six pack for a few years, and now I have a six pack. And guess what? I'm ching-chinging every photo I can while that six pack is there. Although I plan never to lose the six pack, but you know, life happens sometimes.
Listen, I love it, but I'm just saying that everyone on Facebook also loves it, and that is what qualifies it as a thirst trap. So
I can't call it a thirst trap.
Depending on what your intention is, you know, it's about how it's perceived, and it's perceived as a thirst trap.
Look, I think depends who's looking at it. If you are wanting it to be a thirst trap, it can also be inspirational, because if you're a straight guy, it's not a thirst trap. It's you can also do it. You know what I mean? And is there some thirst trapping? I think all of our social medias are thirst trapping. I mean, I've seen your Schmodel flipping smooth blue steel looks. What are you doing there? Well, why are you doing that? And I saw your wife post some things from Dubai. She was looking fantastic. So yes, I mean, I think we all love a bit of attention. Nothing wrong with it. No, nothing wrong.
You're looking great. You're looking great.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate the topless pics. I just came back from Sierra Leone. It was really, really interesting. Like, I try to document the process this time, because, you know, we always talk about how glamorous / unglamorous speaking can be. And so I decided to show people the behind the scenes of me just getting, because this is always the thing. Sometimes you travel more than what you're actually at the event speaking for.
Absolutely.
This was a great example almost of that. So I left Cape Town at 7 o'clock, well, at 5 o'clock actually on a Thursday, to be ready for a flight at 7 to get to Joburg at 9 o'clock. Then I had to wait at the airport until 1 a.m. in the morning to catch a flight from Joburg to Nairobi. Then I landed at Nairobi at about, I think it was about 5 or 6. There was a change in time zone. Then I had to wait 4 or 5 hours to catch a flight from Nairobi to Accra, where they would refuel the plane, and then from Accra to Sierra Leone. So I arrived in Sierra Leone at 5 o'clock the Friday. Then I had to catch a taxi to get to the boat. Then on the boat for 45 minutes to get to the other side of Freetown. Then another 45 minute drive in a taxi to get to the actual event. And so, you know, by the time I landed at the venue, it was an entire day and a half, essentially, that it passed to be there for the keynote and to leave the next day doing that whole thing right back in reverse. But Sierra Leone was amazing, dude. I delivered my new keynote. It's titled, I love this title. Did you see it?
No.
The title is The End of Certainty and What to Do About It.
I did see that. Yes. I thought it was a subtitle, but okay, End of Certainty. I like it. I mean, ChatGPT did well for you. ChatGPT did excellent work with you. Yes, whatever.
That was actually just me.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well done. Look, I mean, that story of your travel makes my back sore just listening to it. Bloody hell. Jeez. That's a lot.
Yeah. And but Sierra Leone, interesting people, you know, they've just come.
They're French, eh?
They've just come off a civil war, you know, 20 years ago. Mm. A brutal civil war. And so the people were quite interesting. Like they're not unfriendly, but they're very stern, very serious. Mm. You can tell they carry a lot of that trauma with him, obviously, so you know, it's fresh. I mean, if I was there, all of that would have happened with me kind of passing between primary school and high school, you know? Wow. So, yeah, so it's very recent. So, yeah, but it was, the trip went very well. Keynote was a great success. Back in SA from Monday, and now prepping for EO, where I'm running their Jumpstart January program for 3 weeks.
Brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. So
lots,
well
lots
done.
Lots have happened. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
good. You. Good stuff. You know, it's so funny because you see a lot of Eastern Europeans here in Dubai and Russians, and smiling is seen as a weakness. And you think about why is that in the times of communism, you weren't allowed to be happy. And if you were too happy, there was something wrong with you. So they've trained themselves to be poker face the whole time. And any smiling is seen as a point of weakness. And it's quite a thing to try and get your head around.
Interesting.
And it's because of the trauma, right? It's because of the trauma that's been integrated into your culture. And now you have to survive. It's a survival mechanism, actually, not smiling. So yeah, I imagine Sierra Leone, anybody coming out of a civil war would have some level of trauma that they have to deal with. So interesting. You know, that's a great thing about our job, is it really see some amazing places. Like, you would never go there otherwise, ever. Like, and there's many places that are like that, you know? So good. I'm glad you got yourself
It gave me, I think this is the thing about traveling in general. It gives you perspective, you know? And so seeing that and, quite a few people, actually, as I was traveling back, I was from the Sierra Leone airport. It's happened 3 times in a row. I would give my passport and, you know, they're making small talk. So how are you doing? And then I was like, yeah, I'm doing fine. How are you? And this was the same, almost verbatim every single time, was they would say, oh, not as good as you. And I'm like, why? Yeah. And then they're like, and then they like point to my passport. And so
you're traveling a lot,
like, because you're going to South Africa, like, we're not doing this because you're going to South Africa. Yes.
Oh, wow.
So it gives you perspective, you know, on what people have been through. And we've spoken about this many times on the pod before, that we play this comparison game, but then you look at your life as it is, and dude, people would give what for that life, you know, like there are people that can't even fathom the wealth that you currently have, the life that you are living, the things that you take for granted. They can't even fathom having a life like that. And then here we sitting in palaces, in, you know, all the luxury that we could really want, all our needs met, and we're going, oh, that's not enough. Oh, like, you know, I need to have so much more wealth. Oh, like way more millions in the bank, or bigger house. And it's like, it's so... It's so twisted, you know. Each to his own, I get that. But it's good to take some perspective and realize that you are living an incredible life. And there are people who have been born by no fault of their own into circumstances that are very difficult to navigate. And as I was driving through Freetown, I was thinking that for you to escape the living situations that they are in, you know, it's easy to say, oh, you can make something of yourself, because people have done that in the past and they've come from nothing. And in fact, one of the guys who were at the event, he showed me, you know, how he grew up and how he was able to change his life. And that's great. And I believe that people can do that. But I also believe the odds are so stacked against you that you really have to be an incredible individual. You have to have incredible resilience, a bit of luck that comes your way in order to do that. But man. It really just gives you perspective on, and makes you more grateful for where you are and what you have. And let me not go too
empathy.
Deep into that.
No, empathy. It really builds empathy more than anything else. Yeah. Did we speak about miserable success last time? I can't remember.
I've seen your video, but we haven't spoken about it.
So you know, this idea of miserable success has become quite a thing for me. I've actually put it into one of my talks now. And a lot of us suffer from miserable success. And it's a tough thing to become clear on and to admit to. It's a tough thing to admit, you know, like, you are feeling ungrateful. And a lot of people, like, have commented on the video and said, yo, it's just gratitude. I'm like, yes, it is just gratitude. But
It's a different pack. You need to explain what miserable success is.
Oh, is it not obvious?
No.
Oh, okay, I will. All right. Okay, fair enough. I met this guy. The first time I met him, I still don't really know him that well, but I've met him a few times at meditation circles and playing paddle with him. 41 years old, owns a very successful business. I didn't know how successful. And when he left the meditation circle, he was driving the latest Range Rover. Great. I thought, wow, nice car. And I left in a taxi and that was fine. And the next day we played paddle and he arrived with a Rolls Royce. And I was like, whoa, okay, this guy's operating on another level. But he would never smile. The whole time we were together, he was upset and irritated and not in a good place. And I kind of thought about him, and then I related it to myself, because the next morning I was writing on my journal about wanting to buy a place in Clifton. And I haven't really even finished renovating my place in Dubai, and I'm already thinking about the next one, and realize I myself am suffering from some level of miserable success. And then my friend Stuart has got the Porsche Macan, you know, the electric Porsche, and it's such a cool car. And while he's buying the Porsche Macan, he says he's looking at the Porsche Turbo, thinking, when is he going to buy the Porsche Turbo? And we both start laughing. And as we're saying this to each other, we laugh and we're like, such a bunch of sods. Like, what a bunch of spoiled brats we are. And we realize that we all have a level of miserable success that's happening to us, by us. And to catch yourself doing that really allows you to celebrate what you have a lot more. Now, I think it's very tough to continuously be grateful and continuously, but there's also a maturity that comes to just being grateful for what you have. And so, you know, what I find is everybody on TikTok that makes comments on that video is a guru. Like, all you're talking about is gratitude and welcome to the side of gratitude. I'm like, listen, you muppet. All of you are flipping. You're not a guru. Now all of a sudden you make a comment as a guru. And actually being authentic of the fact that you're human and you go through these things is actually better than you pretending like you know everything. Either way, so miserable success is very much linked to our modern worlds of addiction to certainty. And the addiction to certainty is brought about by our fear. And this is very much linked to our brains that have been created for a world of scarcity, but we live in a world of hyperabundance. And so what has happened, and it was a fascinating talk I was listening to about why don't we fall in love anymore? There's very few people falling in love. You remember when we were kids, you would fall so deeply in love with somebody, and now there's very few people falling deeply in love. And the reason is that our dopamine receptors are exhausted and fatigued by the amount of access that we have with very little effort. And so we've spoiled our brains that has been wired for scarcity, but lives in a world of hyperabundance. You order food, you order a date, you order anything you want. It's with you within a couple hours, if not a couple days. And so we've exhausted the receptors of dopamine chasing. Most of us are addicted to something or many things because of the requirement of dopamine that's continuously needed because of the modern world we live in. And then you attach that dopamine need to the lack of gratitude to miserable success. Sure. And the brilliant thing that this talk was talking about was, what a trap. We are so trapped. We don't even know we're trapped. That's the genius of this trap. And what was really amazing about this talk I listened to said, when you chase dopamine too much, what you do is let's firstly understand that your brain is always looking for balance. So when you chase dopamine too much, what it's got to do is got to balance itself out with sadness so that you can come back to homeostasis. Then you come back to balance, right? So that's why if you continuously do too much dopamine chasing, whether it's with drugs or social media or porn or alcohol, you start becoming very, very depressed no matter how much of it you get, because you're just now depressed, right? But the alternative is when you go and exercise, you bring pain into your body. And as you bring pain into your body has to balance out again. That's what gives you dopamine. So that's why sometimes what you have to do is, firstly, you have to fast from dopamine. I think meditation does that in a really, really good way. I'm being saunaing every day for 30 minutes. And that sauna also gives me an opportunity to fast my dopamine needs. And then realizing that when you exercise, you are pricking or nudging the pain aspect of your brain. And so then when you leave exercise, you get a hit of dopamine. That's why you get this rush off the exercise, right? So it was a fascinating idea, but all of it comes down to miserable success, is that we are caught up in a loop of miserable success without even realizing we caught up in it.
So obviously things that help you then to regulate dopamine or to control maybe in a healthier way would be things like meditation, exercise, anything that kind of cuts you off from stimulus. Would that be the, is that the correct way of thinking about it?
Yeah, because think about it. You know, food is a dopamine rush. Sex is a dopamine rush. Even exercise as an addiction to more dopamine. That's why people get addicted to Ironman and ultra marathons, because you're constantly pushing your body for more dopamine. And so you've got to become very clear on the fact that you are firstly addicted to it. And the way that the lady was talking about was, you have to, 2 weeks, you have to take yourself off that thing. And for those 2 weeks, life is hell. And then your body starts to balance itself out again. So it's a lot.
Yeah, I was reading a study this morning where they spoke about researchers did the study where they put people into a room and they said, you know, for 15 minutes, just sit, and they couldn't do it. Like people were just getting agitated. They just couldn't sit by themselves without any stimulation. And it's quite funny because it plays into that. Like you've seen, we spoke about this in the pod before, raw dogging, where people will get onto a
raw dogging planes.
It's a 2 or 3 hour flight. And raw dogging here means that you do the flight without any entertainment. You know, so you sit and stare at the seat in front of you.
Seat in front of you.
By the way, a guy, when we were flying back from Nairobi, it's a 4 hour flight, and there was a dude raw dogging that flight. And I was pretty impressed. I was looking at him because he was sitting two seats over, and I was like, I admire your willpower, sir. Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, they put them into the room for 15 minutes and they said, you know, just sit by yourself. And they couldn't do that. They would get agitated. Then they thought, okay, maybe it's because people are like too scattered, you know, like this is what the problem is. Like their minds, it becomes an uncomfortable place for them to be. So they thought, well, maybe if we can focus their minds, it becomes better. So they said to them, before you come into the room, find one thing to think about and then just think about it for the next 15 minutes. And even that didn't last. You know, people would think about it for a little bit and then they would get disengaged and then they'd get uncomfortable. They thought, okay, maybe it's the setting. So they said, okay, instead of coming to our offices, do it at home. And of course, that was also just a disaster. And they came back to this conclusion that we've been conditioned to have input all the time. And if we don't have input, then it creates incredible discomfort for us. And during the December holidays, I actually saw this as well in a different format or in a different shape, which is friends of ours went to Mauritius. And I mean, could you ask for, you know, a better place to just go and chill for a bit and be by the ocean? And like 3-4 days in, they were over it. They were like we bored. And I was like, that's the point. The point is to be bored. The point is to just do nothing. But they got to the 3 days mark and they were like, okay, we need input, like working on businesses again, want to get back home, want to get to doing stuff. And I was like, that's how bad it's gotten, actually, to be honest, is that we can't even go on holiday, that we need to, we feel we need to take a break from a holiday to get back to doing things. It's like we've lost the ability to be bored. And it's a sad thing because being bored
is where all the ideas come.
It's where all the ideas come. But also when you think about it, that's where the dopamine reset, that's where that comes from.
Yes. That's why you see when a parent wants to take an iPad away from a kid, the kid goes crazy. Because the kid doesn't really have the tools to understand what it means, but the dopamine is not being given to the kid. And then the kid is now on a almost like, what is it called when you come off drugs?
Like withdrawals.
Yeah. Withdrawals. Yeah. The kid's going through withdrawals. Yeah. We're all going through withdrawals. Yeah. That's why meditation is so hard, is that people don't want to be going through withdrawals, you know?
Yeah, it's digital.
It's a very hard process. Digital cocaine. But you know, if you think about it, the industries that have done really the best in the world are the ones that are selling us dopamine. And it used to be cigarettes and sugar and now social media. And all of them are dopamine selling, addictive businesses, you know? So it's a problem, you know? We're sitting with a problem.
Speaking of, we are Today, we're recording on the 15th of Jan. And tomorrow, America might face one of the biggest dopamine crises in history.
Yes.
Of America. You know what
I'm
referring to?
Of course I do. TikTok.
Tell us about it. Yes.
Well, TikTok is being banned, but I think it's such a crock, bro.
Dude,
look, Elon Musk is trying to buy it. What's his name? Beast. Mr. Wonderful, Mr. Beast.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's trying to buy it. It's like a scramble to buy it. And it's never going to not be sold to some.
No.
Do you think some American company? I don't think it's right for China to have a social media in the rest of the world when we're not allowed to have anything in there. So I get that.
Sure.
But the truth is there's gazillions of dollars sitting here. Gazillions. So somebody is going to lose money, and there's nobody going to lose this much money. So I don't know who's going to buy it. But I do love the fact that Donald Trump's already causing so much shit everywhere. I mean, whether you like him or not, Jesus, it's causing cuck everywhere. Things are changing. And the truth is, you know, again, whether you like him or not, the system itself was broken. We needed a new system, bro. We can't keep living in this war machine and pharmaceutical machine. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do. Yeah. You know, that's going to be an exciting thing. When is his inauguration? Isn't that also tomorrow? Yeah.
Is it tomorrow?
I don't know. I think his inauguration is happening soon. Because he's also coming in with brand new crypto laws, day one.
Really? Listen, I saw one of my favorite TikToks that I saw yesterday was this Chinese dude.
And 20th of January. Like, sorry, 20th of January.
Okay.
Yeah.
So his TikTok is, "Hi, I'm your Chinese spy.
I'm your Chinese spy."
Yeah. And
Monica, stop sending pictures to that guy. You. He's a fuckboy. Yeah, he's a fuckboy. Yeah.
It's so good. Oh, man.
Oh, he's mocking the whole thing. Yeah, very good.
I wonder how long it'll take for a TikTok. I think there is a TikTok competitor already, Red Note. I think they're trying to get off the ground, but it's going to leave a gap. You know, it's going to leave a void because not only has TikTok been amazing for creators in earning money and obviously making people famous, but it is the app that people are most addicted to. And so it's going to leave a huge gaping void in people's day. And I'm wondering what they're going to fill it with. They're going to look for a substitute.
Look, no. The first thing everybody's going to do is going to download a VPN.
It and
you know, VPN itself, of course, VPN works. You're joking.
It doesn't always
VPNs work, bro.
Always work. Dude.
I VPN.
Do you? What do you VPN?
Yeah, of course. I have to VPN because I can't speak on WhatsApp video, bro, from Dubai. It's illegal.
But there's many services that are smart enough to figure out when you're using a VPN. Like the moment they detect the VPN, they just...
That is true. That has happened to me, yeah. That has happened, yeah.
So I don't think... I don't know. It might be an alternative in some ways, but I don't know if that's going to work.
Well, look, I'm more excited to talk about your journey that you had and the lessons that you brought from that journey because they were so fundamental and foundational for me. And I've spoken to a few of my friends about them and I made a video. Did you see my video? How to turn envy into love. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
How to turn envy into love.
Yes.
So beautiful. The lessons that you got were just so deep. And I think the listeners would really be richer for them to hear them. And why don't you unpack it for us and tell us about the whole thing?
All right. Let me do that. Can you hear Atlas going crazy in the background there?
Have you seen that meme? It's like the dog calling the mom at work and saying, "Mom, the postman came. I went crazy. The postman won't be back for at least 24 hours. Don't worry. I secured the house. Okay, bye, Mom. Bye, Mom." So that's what your dog's doing.
Oh, man,
scaring away brilliant. The delivery guys.
Brilliant. All right. I mentioned in the last pod that as part of me closing out the year, I did a psilocybin journey, which was transformational. And I just did it at home as part of the process for me. And it was super intense. You know, it was maybe the most intense one that I've had. And about like a few things came out of it. There are two things that I'll mention that were transformational for me so far in how I'm showing up this year and also in practices that I'm changing for the year. So the first one was I'll start with the tough one. I'm an Enneagram 3, which means I'm a competitive achiever. And what often happens if you're a competitive achiever is that you'll rush from one achievement to the next. So it's always about achieving more. And part of that is that your achievements are never really internalized. So what happens is that you achieve, but you assign the credit for that achievement to something else. So it could just be, oh, it was luck, or oh, like it's not a big deal, like anyone can do that. Or, you know, you'll find an external source to attach that to, and it never, you never ascribe that credit to yourself. And so this has been in the back of my mind for a bit, and I've been working with a coach on this as well. And then in the journey, it just took me straight to that. And the thing that I was trying to do the entire time in order to internalize success was going, I am success. I am success. I am success. And over, I was just trying to kind of drill into my body through the repetition of these words that you are successful. Like you are successful. Irrespective of what you achieve, even, you know, like can't you hear it? Like, can't you hear this? Like over and over, like hear it, but then internalize it. And it just wasn't hitting. It was like, I was saying it, but it wasn't taking root. And so I was going. And then immediately it was just like, it just dropped me into this thing where it was like, this is not the way. The way that you internalize this is to just be deeply grateful for the things that you've achieved. And so it slowed me right down, and it took me through all the achievements for the year. And it was just about being deeply appreciative of what I'd achieved and deeply grateful for what I've done. And not just rushing from one to the next, but really feeling the accomplishments of it. And it showed me that the way to embed and internalize achievement isn't the repetition of I am success. It is just the acknowledgement and the slowing down long enough to appreciate what has happened. And a big part of that, I spent quite a bit of time just doing that for 2024. And dude, afterwards I messaged you and I said to you, I feel restructured. And I honestly do. I can't explain to you how this year I feel like a different person. Even on our calls, even sitting here talking to you, I feel different. It feels like a lot of things have been stripped out of me, like the need to
rush,
share every single thing that's in my head, the need to look for validation. It feels like all those things were taken away simply because I've finally embedded the things that I've accomplished. And it's not just the professional accomplishments. It's also having built a home, the relationship I have with Danica, the dogs, being within walking distance from the ocean. You know, when I think of the adult life that I've created, like, I don't think I could have, if I go back in time, I couldn't have pictured this sort of adult life. You know, it's kind of difficult to think even of yourself as an adult. But I look at the life that I've created and the setup that I have, and I'm like, even that, I'm grateful for having been able to create that. Like, I've taken ownership for what I've created, because we are great at taking ownership of the negative things that happen in our lives and the mistakes we make. We are great at owning those, but we also need to be great at owning the things that we do right. And I think I've now done that. And because of that, I feel restructured. I feel really solid. And I feel like I belong. It's a very difficult thing for me to try and put into words. But out of this also came, you know, when we spoke last time, was appreciating the applause. And so when I was in Sierra Leone, first keynote for the year, when I was done and everyone was giving me a round of applause, I didn't just rush off the stage. I stood there and I soaked in the moment. And I think I've cracked the code on how to build yourself internally based on what you're achieving, and to realize that, I'll just come back to what I said, owning the good and not just the mistakes. So that's the first bit.
What is so you, before before you carry on, you have put it into great words. I don't see why you say you can't put it into words. You've already put it into fantastic words.
It feels like
it's the achiever. It's the number three again. No, it's again the achiever. I haven't done enough. I haven't said enough. No, you've said plenty. You need to go take more mushrooms. Yeah. You still haven't worked on that one. Yeah. What I want to say is, I think the word that you haven't mentioned at all, and the word I feel when I listen to you talk now, is peace. So peace.
Definitely.
And you know, when I left Dr. Joe in December, I was at peace. I just feel absolute peace inside me. I don't have anything to argue with anybody in my own head. I don't have a defense mechanism in my own head. I think your second point is the thing that I am working on now, because internally I'm in a good place. The second point that you're going to bring up now is something that I'm working on. And we've also had a laugh about the second point. But congratulations for achieving this level of mastery, because it is mastery. And I think it's important to give yourself the kudos of stepping off the treadmill of the constant requirement for more, never appreciating Eric's work. And for you to arrive at that place in itself is a celebration. It really is. It's an evolution of your approach to life, a much more elegant approach. Yeah. And the whole cliche is, it is that you're more grateful. Like, you had to go around 45 years of your life to go in that, to come back. Okay, what do you have to do? Just be grateful. Oh, okay. Yeah. Was that it? Yeah. I mean, we know that, but we can't somehow need to see it 50 times.
You know, thank you for that. Peace is a great descriptor of it. And I think that's why I've also been loving that meditation that you sent me from Dr. Joe Dispenza. The tuning into your heart. It's about having a calm heart.
Oof.
And when
that meditation gives me goosebumps.
It does. But that's what I feel. And I think that's why I'm resonating with it so much, is because it's almost like I'm tapping into what is kind of feeling like a default state at the moment, and then just amplifying that.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I need to do that. This is the thing. I don't feel like I need to do the work to get to the state that he's describing.
I feel like I'm already there. Yeah.
But I get to then relish in it a bit more when I'm doing this meditation.
Yeah. Because why? Because your brain is less busy. And because your brain is calm and at peace, you can arrive at that resonance much quicker. And so, you know, the longer it takes you to come into homeostasis, the more busy your brain is, the more peace you have in your brain, the quicker you can snap into meditation.
So I want to tell you, even the end of certainty and what to do about it, even that keynote came out of the clarity from this. It was sitting and thinking about, what am I really talking about? And that just, it became so obvious for me. But it is because of being in a what feels like a very different state. All right, so that's number one. Number two, this is an interesting one. When I was doing the journey, I kept coming up against something like spiky, you know, something that was, it almost felt kind of dark in a way. And the entire time I was trying to figure out, what is this? Like, what is this thing? And eventually what became clear was that it was envy. And envy has been beneath the surface for me for a long time, I guess. But if I'm honest, and if I reflect on it, in 2024, it was actually a lot more noticeable. And when I think back about last year, I realized that I would spend a lot of my time on social media feeling envious. And not just in general, not for material success, to be honest, but more for what I see people achieve in their careers. And I would see someone do a keynote somewhere, and, you know, we've spoken about this. I'm like, well, why them, not me? I'd see them travel somewhere, and I go, oh, but like, they're not even that good. Like, I'm definitely a better speaker than them. And, you know, like, all these things just beneath the surface the entire time. And so I was like, oh, okay, so this is envy. This is what's been driving this conversation in my head the entire time when I see it. And I was quite clear that I don't want that. And I was trying to figure out, how do I get rid of this envy? What do I do with it? And eventually, it comes out of nowhere. I don't, like, you kind of mull with it and you wrestle with it, and then all of a sudden it's like you just get dropped into the answer. And the answer was, you have to turn people into dogs. And yeah, this is gonna, it sounds like a weird thing to say. The specific words were more, you have to turn people into your dogs. And
yes,
so where that comes from is that when we often, for most of the time, when we talk about, you know, I won't feed this to my dog, or I won't even treat my dog like that, what you are saying is that the way that you would treat a dog is the lowest baseline for acceptable treatment. Like, you know, this scrap of food is so terrible, but like, I still give it to my dog, and you're expecting me to eat that, you know, like this is the lowest common denominator or lowest standard.
Yes, we get you. Yeah. Low standard, yeah.
Should I look for more synonyms?
Six more. Let's go. Six more. So,
the lowest standard of treatment of anything. So,
and just by the way, if you are doing that, if you're treating dogs like that, big F you for talking to dogs like that. Just let it be very clear what Eric and I think about that. Yes.
Okay. So that is the typical standard. In my life, my dogs get my highest regard. They get my most empathy. They get the most of my compassion. Like as high a form of treatment as I can give them, I will give them. As high a form of love and care and compassion that I can give them,
respect. Respect. Yeah.
And so what it was trying to tell me is that you need to take that level of compassion and empathy and respect, and you need to transmute that onto the people that you feel envious about. And so it's become this, and dude, it's a constant practice for me at the moment. Every single day I'm on.
I would change that word from practice to battle. It's a battle for me. Yeah. It's a battle. I'm at war.
Every single day I'm going through Instagram and I feel that pop up, but the good thing is I'm aware of it, so I can
aware.
And then I go, I wish you the best. Like I really hope that this succeeds. I hope that this is going to be the best talk for you. I hope that you get all the success that you want. And doing that, I think it's contributed to more peace, more just relaxation, you know, because if I look at you, and even if you like, you know, my competitor or whatever you might be, but I look at you the same way that I look at my dog, I can't want anything but the best for you. And so it's been such a freeing practice to engage in.
When you told me that, my initial reaction was, I hate hearing that. I don't want to hear that. I hate that. And it's still going on for me, actually, because my brain understands the theory, but my body is so addicted to feeling envy that my body is bucking it. My body doesn't want to feel it, but my brain is, of course, this makes so much sense, but I can even feel it right now in my solar plex. And in my solar plex, I can feel this pain because it's been vibrating at envy without realizing it's been vibrating at envy for so long that it's difficult for me to unplug it, which I am right now. And if you think about what the solar plex energy center gives you, is power. It's your power. It's your direction. And so when you filtered your direction and power into the world through the lens of envy, oh my God, that is so disgusting. Disgusting. And to think I've been doing this for 40 odd years, and when you told me, and that's, again, it's become a great practice, and I made a video about it because I was doing it. I was actually sitting at the pool doing it with somebody, and I was like, I've got to tell people about this because it's just so powerful a tool to replace anybody you hate with somebody you love. And a friend of mine the other day, Mahmood, was saying, every time you argue with your girlfriend or your wife, think of them as a six-year-old kid and speak to them like you would them at six. And all of a sudden, you have all the patience in the world. You have all the understanding in the world. And I think as men, you know, what they were saying the other day is the most attractive energy from a man is daddy energy. And what daddy energy is, besides it, you don't need to sexualize it, but to think about it as somebody that cares for you, loves for you, protects you. That's what a man should be, really. And so if we are applying that to our partners and to our envious competitors that we're envious of, it really gets us and allows us to move into that masculinity in a much more fluid, kinder, more powerful way. And even talking about it, I can feel my body's like relaxing, you know, it's like relaxing into it, starting to understand the theory of it. And, you know, Dr. Joe says, when you become aware of a habit that you have that you don't like, you begin crossing the river of change. And as you start crossing the river of change, you're going to get hit over by tides and rocks and whatever else is coming down that river. And you've got to just keep moving forward. And eventually you get to the other side of the river and that's it. It's banked as a new benchmark of how you are in the world. And I think you and I have done this on different aspects. Like even think about the impatience or earning money, or because I know how much money you're earning, you're rich. And so, you know, so we've overcome those. And as we start to ascend and evolve, deeper, more hidden psyche behaviors start to show up, right? And this envious one, you and I would never have spoken about. Like, you could never admit that you're envious. Like, it's so embarrassing, you know? But here we are, both of us suffering from it. And guess what? I think everybody else on social media is also suffering from it. But you're addicted to envy, so you keep coming back to envy. Actually, I heard this guy, this tantra teacher say, nobody's addicted to porn. People are addicted to shame. And so every time you watch porn, you feel shame. So I want to keep getting more shame, so I'm going to go watch more porn. And it's actually a shame emotional trigger, you know? Sure.
Dude, three things. One is, of course, dogs are the answer. So,
of course, always.
Of course it comes always. Back to being the answer.
Always, so, always.
So that's number one. Number two is, I remember, the day after I was about to tee off and you gave me a call to talk about the journey. And I missed my tee off time by 40 minutes. But the conversation was more valuable than me going off. So that's perfectly fine.
I didn't even realize. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And something you said was very powerful, which is that just knowing this, just having the, like, turn people into dogs, just having that is a reflection point that now there's no going back. That now that you've created that awareness, now there's something to measure against, and now there's no going back, you know?
That's why I hated you when you told me it. I hated you for telling me that. Yeah.
And the third thing that then plays into that is, I was speaking to someone earlier this week, and I said to them, where's your personal development coming from in 2025? Because you're giving me all these things about your business, but what I'm more interested in really is, where's your character development coming from? Like, what are the things that you need to be working on? And they couldn't actually give me an answer to that. And I realized that, again, our awareness isn't quite what it's supposed to be. And I think this is something I've really appreciated about our friendship and about the podcast, is that we've been on a very deep, continuous journey of personal development. And we get to share it here, and we get to laugh about it, and we get to keep figuring it out. But I think the important thing is that we remain curious about where those things might be. What are those triggers? What is hiding in the shadows, and how do we address that? And if you are someone who doesn't quite know what you should be working on, then that is my advice to you as well, is that you need to just stay curious and become a bit more aware of the things where your self-talk perhaps devolves into something more negative, or takes your mind, wants to disengage from something because it feels like there's discomfort. Like, you need to just really be aware of where those things happen. And then don't just gloss over it, because that's going to be the tendency, because the world is fast-paced, so we fast-paced, and therefore we don't stop to deal with anything. We just keep going on. When you notice that, really start thinking about what do you do with it and where it might have come from and how you could move beyond it, because every little hook that is sitting in you is just holding you back from accelerating into a better future for yourself. But those hooks don't come undone by themselves. You have to go and pry them loose. So,
it's good advice.
Yeah.
Become aware of it. Become aware of the pattern. And your immediate reaction to that pattern would be, I want to defend it. I don't want to stop the pattern, just like me, like as you told me now. So look, I mean, we've gone extra long on this pod and it's been wonderful chatting to you, but I want to close off with this. 2025 is the year we turn knobs into dogs. Idiots into dogs. Like my whole, I'm actually going to use AI to make everybody's face the dog's face on LinkedIn and Instagram. And then I'm just going to love all of them. I love you, boy. I love you. Yeah, yeah. So year of knobs into dogs. Brilliant. That's what it is going to be.
Brilliant.
Close us off.
Dude, yeah, thank you so much. It's been absolutely great hanging out with you. It's so great being back to the old format as well. When we started this conversation, it's so funny because it's exactly what we've been doing for 5 years, which is, what are we going to talk about? And then, I've had that question so many times from you over the years. And to be back to having that question was actually quite refreshing. We ended up talking about things that, you know, like we didn't know we were going to go to and spend so much time on dopamine, for example. But that's the beauty of this kind of format, is it takes us where it needs to take us. Thank you for that. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining us for another episode of The Expansive. We hope that you thoroughly enjoyed it and you've learned from it. And more than that, that you'll go and change how you do and how you think about things coming out of this session as well. We always love to hear from you. You can do that on Spotify, on iTunes, on YouTube. If you feel so inclined, we'd love for you to go and rate us as well over on iTunes or YouTube or Spotify. And just a quick reminder that last week, we've been meeting with publishers. Why? Because we are bringing out a book. It's called Expansive. No surprise there. And the book will be available later in the year. We're going to be doing book launches in South Africa and in Dubai. And we can't wait for you to have a copy of the book in your hand. It's going to definitely be a part of the legacy of the pod. And so we're happy to finally be also taking something that is audio and kind of sitting in the ether and turning it into something very physical that you can hold in your hands. And that should be out Q1, Q2 of this year. So keep an eye out for that. But until then, we look forward to seeing you again next week. And of course, as always, be and stay expansive. Ciao.
Ciao.